let's start with a little parsha as we normally do on Thursday. Someone suggested that we move parsha to earlier in the week because of online stuff. Meaning, like, if all parsha has it already on Wednesday, then it'll be easier for people who listen. All right, whatever. We'll just keep it on Thursday. All right. So traditionally, you do parsha on Thursday, right? That's what you do. Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna do that. So one of the details of the story of Yaakov's death that probably gets overlooked, I think, when you think about what happened prior to Yaakov dying. You know, certainly we know about him giving the brachos. We know about Menashe and Ephraim. We know about the switching of the hands. We know about all of that stuff. But one of the details that sometimes gets overlooked is that Yosef actually visited his father twice. At the beginning of the parsha, he didn't visit him once; he visited him twice. In the very second pasuk of the parsha, "Vayikrevu yemei Yisrael lamus, vayikra livno liYosef." So they called Yosef, and he asked to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And then later on, "Vayachre advarim eile, vayomer liYosef hine avicha chole." They tell Yosef, "Oh, by the way, your father is sick." Vayikach shnei vanavimolus Menashe v'Ephraim, and he grabs Menashe and Ephraim, and he runs to Yaakov, and that's when the whole episode happens with Menashe. And Ephraim in the whole conversation, you must be confused. No, I'm not going to rewrite the whole story. So interestingly, when Yosef arrives, Vayigad Yaakov v'yomer, Hinei vincha Yosef ba'elecha, Vayischazek Yisrael v'yesh v'alemita. So they tell Yaakov, by the way, Yosef is here, and Yaakov like strengthens himself and sits up on the mita. So a few questions on these visits between Yosef and Yaakov. First of all, apparently after their first conversation, something else needed to be said, because Yosef needed to have a second conversation. Yaakov Lechora was already sick by the first conversation. He already was talking about dying. He already told Yosef that he wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Why couldn't they just speak about what they needed to speak about in the first conversation? Yaakov knew he was dying. Why can't he cover both topics in a single visit? Also, why didn't Yosef think of bringing Ephraim and Menashe on the first time? It was only the second time when they tell him that he brings Ephraim and Menashe. Why didn't he bring him the first time he went to visit Yaakov? And finally, Chazal in Bav Metzia Daf Pei Zayin tell us that Yaakov is the first person to ever get sick before dying. He was the first one to have like warning signs before dying. Instead of just, you know, a sudden death, Ad Yaakov lo havachulsha. Until Yaakov, there was no weakness that preceded dying. Also, Yaakov came along, boy rachmi vahavachulsha. And he davened that there should be the sense of weakness, a sense of feeling the life departing from the body. Shenemar vayomer liYosef hinei avicha chole. That they told Yosef, your father is sick. Now, he had time to consider his death, and that allowed him to give these very famous brachos that we, you know, in certain schools, they make you memorize. Anyone ever have to memorize the brachos of Yaakov? No, my wife knows them by heart. She had to memorize them when she was there. Yeah, you had to memorize them. What? Oh, okay. So you guys memorize the Bar Mitzvah. Okay. All right. Very good. So these very famous brachos, you know, or whatever you call them, brachos, charge, assessment, criticisms, whatever you want to call them. But these that only happened because Yaakov had advance warning to know that this was going to be his parting shot, that this was going to be his opportunity to leave his children with a message. But how did Chazal know that there was no illness before that point? Maybe other people also got sick, and the Torah just never bothered mentioning it because it was never critical. Meaning over here, it was important to know that Yaakov got sick because of what he did when he realized that he was sick and he realized that he was dying. But maybe this was something that happened prior to that in history as well, and the Torah just never happened to mention it up until this point. How do we know that it's the first time that it ever happened? Furthermore, when Yaakov gives a bracha to Yehuda, he gives him a very strange line in the middle of the bracha, "Ven shinayim michalav," that his teeth are going to be love and they're going to be white, mechalav, from drinking milk. Or whiter than milk, or something like that. I'm reminded of my first year teaching at DRS. So they gave me what they called at that time the Lebedik class, which was, wasn't the top honors class, and at that time there was no top. It was like the second year of the school, so there was no top honors class. So I said over a shtickel Torah from Rav Schachter because I had no idea what I was doing. So I said over a shtickel Torah from Rav Schachter, and I said to the class, "Does anybody know who Rav Schachter is?" So one boy raised his hand. And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay, who is Rav Schachter?" I was like all excited. He said, "I said, what do you know about him?" He said, he's got great teeth. I was like, what? That's what you know about him? First of all, why do you know that about him? He said, well, my dad's his dentist, and he's got great teeth, so I know that about him. So what else do you know about him? Nothing. It's all he knows about Rav Schechter is that he's got great teeth because the kid's dad was his dentist. That kid happens to be, he's a Magid Shir Daf Yomi now, he's a really good guy. But I just saw the dad at a chasna recently. I forgot which chasna it was, but I saw the dad at a chasna recently, and I reminded him of that story. So, whose chasana was it? I don't remember. I saw you at that chasana also, Chanoch. I don't remember. Which chasana was it? What? Oh, maybe it was Meir. Yeah, it was Meir's chasana. Yeah. Okay. So, anyway, so Meir here today? He's got great teeth. So, now, if you had to assess Yehuda, right? That probably wouldn't be the first thing that comes to mind, or certainly not the most important thing that comes to mind, that he's got great teeth. Like, why is that part of the bracha, that he has these beautiful white teeth? So Rav Chaim Kanievsky was asked in Derech Sicha, which is like these questions that they ask Rav Chaim Kanievsky, why the Torah says, Vayomer LeYosef Hinei Avicha Chola. What would have been lost had the Torah said that they told Yosef, Avicha Chola? Without hinei, what does hinei add to the, you know, behold? What is that? Is that just like for dramatic flair? We add the word behold. So Reb Chaim explains that the word hinei, it's not a throwaway word. It's not there just for exclamation. It actually has a very important meaning. The word hinei always implies a great surprise or a change of course. Something that wasn't supposed to be, and then all of a sudden it is. A chiddush. And there are many examples of this. Vayhi baboker vihinei hileya. Yaakov goes to sleep at night next to his wife, who he assumes is Rachel. He wakes up in the morning, vihinei, and it's Leah. It wasn't supposed to be Leah. So it was a surprise that it was Leah. Vayhi ba'is l'ta vihinei tom bibitna. That when you have twins, it's like a change, the biggest life change imaginable. If you know anybody, whenever anyone has twins, I always say it's such a bracha, and Baruch Hashem, it's your bracha and not my bracha. You know, like it's just it's a wonderful thing. It's a great, great bracha, but it's like life altering and sometimes not in the most easiest way. So when you have that, people who are parents of multiples of twins or triplets, they remember that doctor's appointment and like. Like how much crying there was, like right after that doctor's appointment. It's hinei. It's like it's not something that a person is expecting. And even in Tehillim, where the pasuk says hinei lo yonum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael, that hinei that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't slumber, he doesn't sleep. Rav Schwab explains David HaMelech is talking to people who are suffering, and he tells them that you might feel that Hashem is not paying attention, that He's abandoned you. Hinei. That it's Hashem doesn't sleep, and it's going to come in an unexpected way. You're going to discover that. Meaning, you think that there's no hope. You think that everything is dark. That you have nothing positive going on in your life, and you're going to see it's going to come in a surprise. It's going to come in a twist where you're not looking for it, and all of a sudden you're going to realize, wow. Meaning that alone, just that example alone, is worthy of its own, its own independent message to explore. You know that Hashem doesn't sleep; He's always paying attention. I heard an interview once with Jay Feinberg, the founder of the Gift of Life Bone Marrow Registry. Anyone ever get swabbed for the bone marrow stuff? So when I was in yeshiva as an undergraduate. There were signs in like every pizza shop and every all over the place, get tested for Jay, and there was a picture of Jay and saying he needs a bone marrow transplant, and there were like these drives all over the place, like everyone you knew was getting tested. At that time it wasn't a swab, it was a blood test, but everyone had the whole YU got tested. I remember in the morgue dorm they had testing going on, and I got tested at that time. Tens of thousands of people were tested to see if they would be a match for him. I ended up being a match for someone 20 years later, and thousands of people that got tested for him ended up being matches for other people, and they only got tested because they saw the signs for Jay Feinberg. They ran drives for 4 years, and they were about to give up. It's a remarkable story. They were about to give up. It was over. And then on the final, they were going to give up. It was going to be the end of him. You know, he didn't find a match. And then on the final drive that they were going to run, before resorting to some very long shot, very imperfect match, the very last person to be tested on the very last drive that they were going to do turned out to be a perfect match. And it was someone who wasn't even interested in getting tested. He was there to help run the drive. He wasn't even there to get tested. And, you know, he gets queasy around needles and whatever, so he didn't want to get tested at all. And they said, look, you know, we're closing up shop here anyway. It was like, I think it was in Milwaukee, the last drive or something like that. It was a couple of Bachrim from Chicago, went to Milwaukee and ran a drive. And it was like, they're like, why don't you just get tested? So he was the last guy to be tested in the last drive. So can you imagine how abandoned Jay Feinberg must have felt? All along the way, hundreds, thousands of people being tested, and nobody's a match. Why does Hashem have to put him through this for 4 years? Well, it turns out that hundreds of lives were saved because they didn't find a match. Can you imagine if they would have found the match the first drive, they would have found a match right away? Then all those people wouldn't have been tested. Hundreds of people would have died as a result of that. From those tens of thousands of people who had to test for him, since he was still looking for a match, so many other matches, including mine, were made. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. The shomer Yisrael is always there. He's always paying attention. He's always awake. And that, says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, is where Chazal got the idea that Yaakov was the first person to get sick. It should not have been a surprise that he was sick. People get sick all the time, right? You know, it's like now everyone's acting surprised that there's something called the flu, because there's something other than COVID. Yes, we have a terrible flu season. So, okay, that happens. It's not surprising, of course, that's going to happen. It shouldn't have been a surprise that Yaakov was sick. Why all of a sudden was it so surprising that Yaakov was sick? Because it had never happened to anybody before. That's where Chazal are medayik from the word hine avicha chole, that hine, your father is sick. Why are you so surprised that the father is sick? And maybe, though, the word hine is not only a reflection of how surprising it was for Yaakov to actually be sick, which is in itself surprising, but how surprising it was for Yosef to learn of Yaakov's illness. Meaning, it seems that Yaakov was already sick the first time. I mean, the first time he spoke to Yosef, he was already planning his death. He was already talking about it. How come Yosef didn't know, didn't realize that Yaakov was sick at that time? He had no clue, apparently. They told Yosef afterwards, Hinei avicha chola. And that's why he called for Yosef the first time. He realized he was dying, so he called Yosef. And yet Yosef walked out of that meeting having no idea that Yaakov was sick. How did that happen? How did Yosef not realize it? So Rav Pam used to explain that, I heard this from Rabbi Reisman, that the Gemara in Ksubas and Kufir Alf and Bey says that when a person performs the mitzvah of Achnas Zorchim, that it has to be b'sever panim yafos. So when Yaakov speaks to Yehuda, who's going to be the most powerful of all the Shvatim, he tells him how important it is for him to smile at people. Let people see the whiteness of your teeth. When you smile at somebody, you're going to make their entire day. You might be in a bad mood yourself, personally, but that's no excuse to bring other people down. It's no excuse to have that be reflected on your face so that everybody else could be depressed as well. People will never forget the day that the king smiled at them, that someone really important, really chashuv, gave them the time of day or showed them that they were genuinely happy to see them or to speak to them. And a melech has to be cognizant of that kind of hashpa'ah, of that kind of influence that he's going to have on other people just by his general disposition toward them. The melech can't afford to be grumpy one day. Look what he's doing, what he's going to do to other people if he's grumpy one day. So regardless of how he's feeling, he has to project this image of happiness. But before Yaakov taught that lesson to Yehuda, he himself put it into practice. Yaakov was sick. He was really, really sick. He felt miserable. Nobody had ever been sick before. It must have been scary. He wanted to be sick. He wanted to learn to have a warning sign of his death. But that must be pretty scary. You know, one of the things with you know, let's say with COVID. When COVID started, obviously it was scary because so many people were dying. It was also scary because we had no idea what it was, right? I remember my wife saying, I don't know, I can't smell or taste anything, but they're not saying it's a symptom yet. They did, for weeks, they didn't even know that it was a symptom of COVID. Now, it's the symptom of COVID, but it's like, it's so weird, it's so disorienting. I can't smell, I can't taste, I don't know what this is. No one ever had that, I don't know what this is. When you don't know what's going on, it's scary. And it must have been depressing, and Yaakov must have realized that it would be even more depressing for his children to see. But he knows that he's dying, so he calls a meeting with Yosef. He says, Yosef, I've got to talk to you. And he starts talking about, you know, what's going to be after his death and where that he wants to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. He has important arrangements to make. But apparently, he never told Yosef that he was sick, nor did he ever give off the impression that he was sick. He smiled and acted as if he had all the energy in the world. It was only later that others told Yosef that Yaakov was sick. It was surprising because Yosef had just seen him and he was fine. And then he gets told, by the way, your father is very ill. What do you mean he's very ill? I just saw him. He was doing okay. But then what Yaakov does, what does Yaakov do when Yosef comes back? Vayishchazik Yisrael vayeshev al amita. He hears that Yosef is coming back. Got to get back into, you know, got to put on the show again. Got to pretend I'm okay. Because I don't want Yosef to see that I'm sick. He strengthens himself. And he does his best not to upset Yosef by his appearance. And as with most important lessons that parents try to teach their children, Yaakov taught the lesson of the white teeth to Yehuda, not only in word, but in action, by doing it first in his own life. He saw no reason to project negativity and every reason to project positivity. And that's not something that came naturally to Yaakov. We know it didn't come naturally to Yaakov, because when he met Paro, he projected negativity. And Paro says, oh my gosh, I've never seen someone so old like you before. And Yaakov, ma'at v'ra'im. So Yaakov was punished for that. But apparently, he learned his lesson. And apparently, he realized that just the way one appears to other people can change their entire mood and can change their entire disposition. And that's what Yaakov was trying to bless Yehuda with, was trying to, the instruction he was giving Yehuda. And that's how Yaakov was practicing when he met Yosef on both occasions. But I think it's so powerful that he dafka gives that as part of the bracha to Yehuda. Because a lot of times people don't realize who they are in the eyes of other people. Meaning, you know, you always think of yourself as, you know, you're just a regular guy. But, you know, if you're a smicha student in yeshiva, so how does an undergraduate look at you? How does an MTA kid look at you? How does, you know, how do other people look at you? You know, at a certain point in time, I remember I once I was upset about something someone had done in the shul. So I called them up and I said, you know, what you just did wasn't really right. It was, you know, I just called them up and said, you know, gave it to them straight, you know. It was terrible, Aveira, you should do tshuva. You know, basically, that's what I did. And the person, like, freaked out. And the rabbi calls you up to tell you didn't have Aveira. I wasn't thinking it was the rabbi calling you up. I was just thinking you did something bad, so I just told you did something bad. Like, you know, but like for them, it's the rabbi is calling, meaning you have to realize the way other people look at you and what kind of effect you could have on another person by projecting a sense of positivity or by projecting the opposite, and how that can change their entire disposition, their entire day. How many times Talmidim from DRS over the years said, oh, I remember Bein Latov, Bein Lara. I remember the one time that this Rebbe, you know, growled at me, or that the Rebbe didn't think he was growling. He was growling about the fact that his kid gave him a hard time that morning. He wasn't growling at you, but he was projecting it. And when you project that, it has an impact. Or remember that one night, that nice thing that you know, that the Rebbe said, you know, you should really go to this camp because you know, it's a great place for a really nice good boy to go. Wow, you called me a nice good boy. I don't know, the Rebbe wasn't even thinking. He was just describing what he saw. He wasn't even thinking. But it could be such a chizik for someone. So that's the secret of the white teeth that Yaakov, even in his illness, hine. You know, it's Rabbi Bamberger from Landers used to always, he still does, always likes to say words that are hu haya omer, right? You know, hu haya omer is I think one of the mefarshim say, it doesn't just mean that it's something that Tana taught in Pirkei Avos, hu haya omer, it's that his whole essence was that it was like a vort that he would say, he'd say the shtickel Torah, but the way he lived was an expression of that shtickel Torah. So this vort of Rav Pam is like, it's like so perfect, it was such a hu haya omer kind of vort, right? What did Rav Pam Ham use his last bit of life force that he had in him, his last bit of energy that he had, was to speak at a Shuvu, fundraiser. And you ever see the video of this? You guys don't know what I'm talking about? It was unbelievable. They brought an ambulance to a Shuvu fundraiser. His whole family said, "You cannot go." It's, you know, he was mamish at the end, and he just like he in a superhuman way, he found the koach to be able to speak and to smile and to raise money for Shuvu. They raised more money that night than they probably raised in all the years of the existence of the organization, because people were so impressed. That's a hu hayo omer vart, that no matter how you feel, you can project differently than what you actually feel inside. And you'll find very often that when you project a more positive image, that you'll start feeling that way as well. That you'll start feeling a more positive way as well. Right? There are a lot of studies done about that. My favorite one is the one where they had, the one with the pencil. You know, they had two groups of people watching a movie, and they had like half of them were holding. It was like a horror movie or something, and half of them they told to hold the pencil in their mouth like this, and the other half to hold the pencil in their mouth like this. So half of them were like this all the time, and the other half were like this. And they found that the people who had the pencil like this, where your face is forced into a smile, they thought that the movie was cute and funny. And the people that were like this were terrified. Because the way you know, when you smile, you'll think things are funny and you'll think things are happy. When you're not smiling all the time, when you're sad, so then you're gonna think things are sad. That's not gonna play so well on the recording, right? Okay. So all right. So we'll stop there. Okay.